Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
And gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion, commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, August 27th, 2013, and we have a very special guest today, Pastor Dan Fisher. His expertise is the Black-Robed Regiment, the preachers of the 18th century who played the major role in birthing our country. And Alfred will be interviewing this gentleman. And but first, we're going to do the market report. A lot of things going on in the markets. We have a great special going on, so let's get started right away. We have gold settling off today, off from the highs, up $10 today at $1,416. The high today was $1,425. Silver today is up 16 cents, $24.59 off the high, $24.84. Platinum was down $17 at $15.32, and palladium followed right along, down $5 at $749. Crude oil today, up big $3 at one, closer to 109. It was 108.91, and the USDX today was down 0.24 at 81.14. Paper markets today, the equities, they got pummeled today. They were down. Oh, and I was going to do this so smooth today.
Yeah. According to my indicator, Dow is down 170 points.
Down 170 points at 14,775. The NASDAQ was down 80 points at 35.78. You also have the S&P down 26 at 1630. Hey, everybody is concerned about the military action in Syria, of course, and with oil jumping 3%. I guess, on the other hand, the 10-year yield dropped 2.72 on the news, but, of course, we also had a lot of pressure on the U.S. dollar. And everybody's talking that it's the Syria conflict out that is pushing the metal prices higher, and, of course, everything that we're seeing in the markets. But we still have another problem, and that's our economy, and that's just going to be following right after this. So if they don't continue with this, with the situation in Syria, which I don't know, Al. It kind of looks like they're pretty much on target to do so in a couple days.
Yep, that'd be my guess. It would surprise me if we had a program on Monday and our government hadn't already bombed Syria with either bombs or missiles. Hard to say how serious that's going to be. I mean, we're not going to see an invasion of foot soldiers, so far as I'm able to understand. Certainly not a lot of them. There may be special forces in there already, but mostly just bombing and leave it up to the rebels to clean up whatever's after the bombing. But it'll go after government facilities, and hard to say. Hard to say what all will happen.
Well, the aftermath is, of course, you're having all the concerns coming out with Iran threatening Israel will be the first strike, will be the first victim. You also have all the combining of China and Russia coming together. You also have North Korea and, of course, other areas siding with Syria. So it's, I don't think they have a clue what they're really doing. And
well, they have a clue. They just don't know what they can get away with. I don't know what they're going to do exactly. I'm sure they have plans, but what can they get away with? There's the question. And we'll find out more over the cooks in the next several days or perhaps weeks. We'll watch and see.
I hope not. I hope they come with enough sense to back off, but it doesn't seem that they will. In the meantime, $20 gold has been just jumping like crazy today. I went back and did a brief.
$20 gold, you mean?
Mint state.
What do you mean by $20?
Coins.
Okay.
St. Gaudens and $20 Liberty gold pieces in mint state condition. I went back just a week ago. And from a week ago, gold is up $47. Mint state 63 $20 gold pieces in that same time frame is up $95.
Almost double.
Almost double. So they're tremendous coins, and yet they're still priced in relationship to lower grades. They're still priced at a very good price, and we're running that in our special today. Mint State 63, $20 gold pieces, St. Gaudens, not the Liberty, but the St. Gaudens. Most of them will be minted in the 1920s. Again, it's up $95 in a week. It's an incredible value, offering performance, protection, privacy, and we're also going to include 90% silver quarters. I was able to pick up some more since they went so fast last week in our specials. I picked up some more, and with the total package, including shipping, it's $2,700. The 90% quarters is a $50 face value, so you'll have basically 200 quarters that you'll be receiving. $2,700, that includes all your shipping costs. So all you have to do, folks, is pick up that phone and dial 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, Melody. We've got a special guest here today, Pastor Dan Fisher, and he is not merely familiar with the Black-Robed Regiment. He's going to explain the significance of the Black-Robed Regiment back during the time that our country was being birthed. He'll explain that, and he'll explain why he and others are trying to bring a Black-Robed Regiment back into American churches today. Pastor Dan, are you there? Okay, we need
I'm here. Here we go. Now,
all right, here we go. I do the same thing once in a while, that mute button. Doesn't just turn off the sound. Sometimes it turns off prefrontal cortex a little bit. You can't.
What? Exactly right.
Yeah. Tell us a little about your background, Pastor Dan.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I'm pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Yukon, Oklahoma, which is a suburb just west of downtown Oklahoma City. And I've been here working on my 22nd year as pastor. We're a church of around 1,000. And I've been in the ministry since I was 16 and been in vocational ministry for 32 years of those. I'm 54 now. In fact, I just turned 54 yesterday. So I've been in the ministry most of my life. And like I say, I've been here for a good long while. And I have always believed that the Bible addresses every area of life, whether it's economics or spiritual issues as far as getting people from here to heaven, or whether it's showing people how to live a good moral life or build a good solid marriage or family. And I also believe the Bible applies to how we engage in the culture, how we engage in government. So I've always been very active in that arena also. And last year I was elected to the Oklahoma State Legislature, and I just finished the first half of my first term as representative from District 60 here in Oklahoma.
Well, that's interesting and a little bit unusual to find people who are both ministers, pastors, and running for public office. I'm not sure how many other ministers are running for public office. Do you have any feeling about that? Do you have any knowledge, or are you fairly unique or fairly common?
Well, it's a pretty uncommon thing in the House of Representatives here in Oklahoma. Of course, we're a very socially conservative state. We have one other vocational preacher or pastor who's a representative. So there are two of us. Now, there are a number of others who are probably lay speakers or who have preached from time to time, but there are only two of us in the state of Oklahoma serving in the House. And I think there may be one maybe in our Senate. So here in Oklahoma, it's a relatively small number, and I think that is true across the country. There are probably not that many vocational pastors who are actually serving at the state level.
You made a comment when you were describing your background. You said most of your life has been spent in the ministry. That suggests that you were pretty much a conventional minister in the beginning, and more recently, by favoring the black-robed regiment. You can describe that in a moment. Tell us what this is all about. But it suggests that you have something happened, something changed, where you moved from being a conventional minister to something a little more radical. And maybe, I'm not sure if you agree with the term radical or not, but you correct me.
Well, the people who know me well probably would never use the word conventional to describe me. I've always colored outside the lines, so to speak, when it comes to my ministry and what it looks like. I'm very, very orthodox, very fundamental when it comes to basic evangelical beliefs and doctrines. The church I pastor is a Southern Baptist church, so we're very, very orthodox. But even back in the days of Reagan, when I was a very young pastor, I was engaging the people even at that time and trying to show them how Scripture must be used and brought to bear on how we create or form our political positions. It's always been bewildering to me how people can say they believe one thing from Scripture and how God's Word is true in every area of life, but then they can align themselves with a political party or a political movement that actually promotes and embraces the exact opposite set of principles. That never did compute with me. So, for instance, I don't see how a born-again Christian could support or promote any political ideology that would embrace the murder of the unborn through abortion.
I understand.
It's just antithetical to my thinking. So I've really always been involved at that level. But you are right. About five to 10 years ago, I realized how the downward slide in the American culture and our spiritual drift was beginning to reach what I would call exponential proportions. So it's like the old proverbial snowball that's rolling down the hill. After it begins to get a certain size, its speed picks up and its rate of growth obviously accelerates. And so 10 years ago, certainly, but 5 or 6 years ago, I became incredibly alarmed at what was going on here in America and the erosion in major chunks of our liberties. And then, of course, what's happening economically in our country, as far as I'm concerned, is nothing more than the end result of years of what I would call immoral legislation and immoral government practices.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, so the Bible tells us for instance, how to run an economy. I mean, it's not a book on economics, but the Bible does address economic issues. Like, for instance, when Paul told the Christians at Thessalonica, if you don't work, you don't eat. Now, obviously, he wasn't referring to those who were crippled and couldn't work or those who were sick or infirm. He was talking to the average person who was trying to game the system.
Yep.
Well, we have completely ignored that principle in America today. And as you know, and probably emphasize quite often on your program, we now have created a dependent class who don't even know what working for your living even means and actually believe that, that people around them owe them a living. They could work if they were so aligned to, but they're rewarded not to. Well, that's a complete denial of the biblical principle on if you don't work, you don't eat. So I began to realize that all these things were just beginning to come at us from every direction. And about that same time, I discovered the black-robed regiment that you've been referring to. And so that really just accelerated my whole involvement.
Well, give us an idea of what the black-robed regiment is, or was, and may be again.
Oh, certainly. I would be honored to do so. You know, I go all over the country now, literally, doing this presentation as a pastor and as a legislator. I probably need my head examined for taking on all of these responsibilities. But in addition to doing those two things, I have a full-blown presentation, a multimedia where I do it in full period costume, even have a small museum that I bring with me where I have muskets where we know the soldier's name who carried that particular musket and the battles that he used it in. I have a musket that crossed the Delaware with Washington and was used at Trenton, and I have another musket that was carried by a lieutenant named Perkins at the Battle of Bunker Hill. So I go all over the country doing this presentation that I've called Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment. And what that is, basically, is the title that the British gave the preachers of the 18th century. When I first heard about the Black Robed Regiment, I thought it was some group of judges somewhere, because I'd never been taught about the Black Robed Regiment. And then all of a sudden I understood that what that was a term of derision given by the British, who actually blamed the preachers for the War of Independence, because those preachers in the 18th century would generally, on Sundays, they would preach wearing black robes, and they'd wear these white scarves, and they would get up into their pulpits, and they would take the Bible, and they preached what I would call the whole counsel of God, and they would use the Bible to and apply it to every area of life, including politics. Now, for them, of course, politics did not involve the Democratic or Republican Party. They didn't even have political parties in those days. For them, politics meant what are the underlying principles, and for them they were biblical, that would define a just and God-honoring government. And they would preach this from their pulpits. They would preach about liberty being a gift from God and how liberty should be defended at all costs. And of course, as British tyranny it continued to increase and the stranglehold of the British crown got tighter and tighter around the colony's throats, eventually these pastors saw the British intruding so much into their lives that they began to form Minuteman groups. For instance, in Lexington, Massachusetts, you had the pastor Jonas Clark, who, with the help of a deacon named John Parker — John was a veteran of the French and Indian War, they called him Captain Parker — started training the men of his church on Sunday afternoons after church how to fight together as soldiers, because many of them did not have soldiering experience. And they had been forming these Minuteman groups all over New England, and the pastors were the primary leaders. So on April the 18th, when Paul Revere is making his famous ride through Massachusetts, yelling, "The regulars are coming," he rides to Lexington, Massachusetts, and he heads straight for Jonas Clark's house. The pastor in Lexington, who that particular night had Samuel Adams and the famous John Hancock spending the night with him, because the British had been given orders to capture those two and bring them back in as prisoners of war. So Revere rides to Pastor Clark's house. They have a little impromptu council of war, and Samuel Adams and John Hancock asked the preacher, Clark, if the men would fight. And the men
okay,
were
let me, let's
to...
hold off on that. Let's,
okay.
We'll find out if the men would fight in just a moment. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Adisk on Financial Survival with our guest, Pastor Dan Fisher. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here on Financial Survival, and my guest is Pastor Dan Fisher, who is attempting to bring back the Black-Robed Regiment, a term coined by the English during the American Revolution, and it reflected the fact that ministers, preachers, pastors at the time of the American Revolution were actively involved in motivating the American people to stand up and fight against the British. And there's at least a high probability that without the ministers providing a moral foundation for Americans to fight the British, not just a moral foundation, but a spiritual foundation, high probability that we might not have fought for our freedom. We might be still saying God save the Queen or whatever in this country rather than God bless America. So we're talking to Pastor Fisher. And we'd closed, he was telling us a story about Paul Revere and how he had been asked by two men, I think you said John Hancock and one other whose name skips my mind, will the people fight? And that's where we broke off, so let's go back there. I think you still got that mute button on, Pastor. Well, either that or we have some other sort of a problem. Frank, can you tell me what the problem is right now? What, if anything, why is it that we're not hearing from the pastor right now? Well, we have lost Pastor Dan Fisher. Try calling him back, Frank. Try calling him back. You have his number. Call him back. And in the meantime, I'll get into a little of this myself. And I'm familiar with the black-robed. In fact, I thought of Pastor Fisher uses the term black-robed regiment, and I don't doubt that that's correct. Over the years, I've used the term black-robed brigade. And I was talking about the same thing. And again, the point was that the British were defeated in large measure because American ministers, preachers, so on, stood up on the pulpit and pointed out that King George was engaged in acts that were sinful and ungodly. It wasn't just a question of politics. It wasn't just a question of money. The ministers tried to illustrate to the people in their congregations that what King George had done was contrary to God's law, contrary to God's will. Well, it didn't motivate everyone to fight, but it motivated a lot of people to at least sit on the sidelines. I've heard estimates that only something like 3-5% of the American people actually engaged, actively engaged in the war against Great Britain, the American Revolution, and the ministers were responsible for motivating those people to a large degree. Now, they didn't motivate the other 95%, but the other 95% were at least motivated to mind their own business and stay out of the conflict. They might otherwise have supported King George, but thanks to the ministers, that support was not significant. And thanks to the ministers, there were sufficient Americans to stand up and claim this country's freedom. And Pastor Fisher is back on the line. Are you there, Pastor Fisher?
I am here. Sorry about that. We were disconnected somehow.
Okay. Well, I keep talking regardless. You can't hardly stop me. Where we broke at the commercial, you were telling us a story that involved Paul Revere. And one night he encountered, I believe you said, John Hancock and one other American patriot whose name escapes me. And they asked Revere, will the people fight? And you can continue with the story from that point.
Sure. Well, Revere's riding on April the 18th, 1775. It's the night before the Battle of Lexington and then Concord later that afternoon. And he's warning the British citizens. He knows that there are Minuteman groups all over New England. He rides to Jonas Clark's house. He's the pastor of the church in Lexington. He knows that he's been training his men to at least make a stand against the British, whether or not they would strike the first blow, we can talk about in a moment. But anyway, Samuel Adams and John Hancock were guests of Jonas Clark that night. So Revere rides up. He warns them that the British are coming. Samuel Adams, John Hancock, the pastor Jonas Clark have a little impromptu council of war, and they ask Pastor Clark, would his men fight? And he said, well, I trained them for this very hour, and they would fight, and if need be, die too, under the shadow of the house of God. So the decision was made that they would ring the alarm bell, gather the Minutemen. They did it twice. Finally, in the early hours of April the 19th, 1775, about 77 Lexington Minutemen, a number of them members of Jonas Clark's church, led by Deacon John Parker. His statue is there today where the old Lexington church stood. They formed outside the church, which would be Jonas Clark's churchyard. We call it the Lexington Green today. And about 700 to 800 British regulars marched into Lexington and lined up in formation. And ultimately, Parker warns his men to stand their ground. But the preachers had preached for years that God would not honor a war unless it was defensive. And they were warned, do not initiate a fight with Great Britain Well, after a while, Parker told his men to disperse, and someone fired a pistol, more than likely a British officer. The Redcoats took that as a signal to open fire, and there was about a 15 to 20 minute, what we would call skirmish, between the Lexington Minutemen and the British regulars. But that was, in my opinion, the shot heard around the world. It happened on the churchyard of Jonas Clark. His men from his church were heavily involved, and then later that afternoon, the British march on to Concord. But by that time, pastors all over New England had heard about what had happened to their brethren in Lexington, and pastors gathered the men of their churches, and they lined the road leading back from Concord to Boston. It's called Battle Road today, and they sniped at the British, who had to literally fight their way all the way from Concord all the way back to Boston. And that's just a little snippet of the history that we've not been told. And so when I learned this, I asked myself the question, well, who forgot to tell me that the Lexington Minutemen were trained and led by a pastor?
Not only that, what we're actually talking about here to some degree is that the Minutemen weren't simply a bunch of people who were motivated on a political level. We're talking about, we use the label Minutemen, and we're led to believe these are guys that get their rifle in a short period of time or their musket, and they were ready to go. They were Minutemen. But they weren't exactly Minutemen. They had been raised, at least many of them, raised and given a spiritual foundation over years before they finally got to the point where they were ready to respond in a minute. And the point I'm trying to make is we don't hear about the spiritual foundation for the Minutemen.
We hear about them
being political. We hear about them being activists and good shots and so on. But we don't hear about that spiritual foundation. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, I think it's because, for the most part, historians over the last 100 years especially, but in doing the research for my book, I just finished a book on the history of the Black Robed Regiment. And of course, it's titled Bringing Back the Black Robed Regiment. Mm-hmm. It's a two-volume series with over 1,000 endnotes in it. I researched it extensively. And you have to go back basically to the war between the states to find much writing about the religious training of these men and the role that the church played. And I think the reason for that is because over the last 100 years, maybe 150 years, historians have been busy trying to expunge the Christian influence out of history, and we've just basically eradicated, whatever word you want to use, we have censored
forgotten
our history.
What happens we've been trained, essentially educated, to forget that history. We've lost sight of the spiritual foundation on which this country was built. And I'm going to contend that that spiritual foundation not only laid the foundation for American prosperity, it was the cornerstone for American greatness, grandeur, glory. And insofar as we lose sight of that spiritual foundation, it's not surprising that we're headed deeper into poverty.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question in my mind about it, Al. For instance, in the 1730s and 40s, before that, America's religious condition was actually in bad shape. Churches were dwindling. Churches, in the effort to get more members, came up with what they called the halfway covenant, where someone could join the church but not even claim to be a true born-again Christian. They didn't even have to be baptized. If they would just join the church, the church said, well, maybe eventually they'll kind of come around and they'll become a true believer. That's the shape that the church was in the 1720s and early 30s. But then something
1720s?
Happened. Yes.
No. Okay, prior to the American Revolution.
Yes.
Okay.
And then something happened. We call it the first great awakening in America in the 1730s and 40s. Some preachers like Jonathan Edwards and John Wesley and George Whitfield and Jonathan Mayhew and others who were doing what you were saying, they were connecting the dots, God raised them up, and a revival swept across America. And literally hundreds of people were having a a confrontation with the Lord, an experience with the Lord where they were becoming truly born again, and it was something more than just religion. It was a relationship with God, and it was a spiritual movement. Now many of those pastors lived into the 1770s and 1780s, but a number of the pastors who were part of the Black-Robed Regiment were boys during that time, and they grew up in that environment. Guys like Peter Muhlenberg, who was a pastor in Woodstock, Virginia, who is kind of the quintessential Black-Robed preacher, he grew up during that period of time. And you have this great spiritual awakening that has occurred, and so here are these preachers in the 1730s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s preaching, connecting all of the dots for the people, so that by the time the British tyranny gets to the point of just impossible to live with. And as you know, our founders, I pointed out in the book, went to great lengths to avoid armed confrontation with the British. The grievances that they listed in the Declaration of Independence, documenting all of the efforts that had been made. The pastors had even, for many, many years, had held out hope that somehow the British crown would come to its senses and recognize the contracts and covenants and charters that they had made. The king was breaking all those. So there was a point where liberty was more important than submission. And these preachers had taught that there are two kinds of liberty, internal and external, and that the external flows out of the internal. Of course, the internal comes from a relationship with the Lord. And so, so this was all going on behind the scenes that's leading up to the moment that we call the American Revolution, which in my mind really was not a revolution. In fact, there's a whole chapter in my book where I prove, using sermon excerpts from what these men preached, that these guys were anything but wide-eyed rebels or anarchists. These guys believed in the rule of law. They wanted a peaceable coexistence. And one of the proofs of it is they didn't board ships and sail to England and try to usurp the throne. They basically said, look, you live the way you want to live, you govern yourselves the way you want to, and allow us to do the same 3,000 miles away on another continent.
I think what they were showing people was, I think they were showing people, they're teaching people how to perceive the difference between right and wrong. All right, and not just a secular right and wrong, but a spiritual right and wrong. And once you see that, if you become motivated by your faith to engage in a particular conflict, you become a very, very difficult adversary. Because once you think you're doing God's work, pretty hard to stop. Very difficult for people to. And this is part of the reason why the British would have been upset with the Black-Robed Regiment. They motivated people in a way that Great Britain was the superpower of the world at the time.
Oh, that's
exactly. And you can see why the American revolutionaries were reluctant to go to war with them. And it was only a handful of Americans that actually fought against the British, and this was against incredible odds. We shouldn't have won this thing.
Oh, no. No, we shouldn't have at all. In fact, George Washington, when the war was over, Washington, and I quote a part of the letter in my book, he writes to General Nathanael Greene, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but basically Washington says, you know, God intervenes so many times for us through divine providence. Our children who were not there to see it aren't going to believe it when we tell them. They're going to think we're making it up.
Yeah.
They understood this. But see, I believe that the reason God had intervened is not because the American people are inherently better people, or that we're somehow more godly, or that we deserve something more than other peoples. It's just that those men and women had instilled in them biblical principles, and they were standing on those principles. You know, you can read many of the Black Robe Regiment preachers, you can read their sermons, and one of the things that's loud and clear, you get it from guys like William Smith out of Philadelphia, or John Witherspoon, who was the only vocational preacher to sign the Declaration of Independence and was also the president of Princeton.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Why don't we hold off? We're going to take another break here in about 10 seconds, Pastor Dan, and we will come back, and you can give us the principle that's being communicated with those sermons when we return. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Pastor Dan Fisher from Oklahoma. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Pastor Dan Fisher on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, give Melody Cedarstrom a call. Again, 1-800-375-4188. When we broke, Pastor Dan was going to explain to us some of the principles that were being preached by the ministers to the congregations back at the time of the American Revolution. So go ahead, Pastor Dan, let's finish that. Let's get into that a little deeper.
Well, I was mentioning William Smith, who was out of Philadelphia. He was one of the Black Robe preachers. Let me just read a little piece of one of his sermons. It's just one sentence. He preached this in 1775. He said, "Religion and liberty must flourish or fall together in America. We pray that both may be perpetual." Or here's John Witherspoon, the one I was talking about, who was the only vocational pastor assigned the Declaration. He was also president of Princeton. He said, "God grant that in America true religion and civil liberty may be inseparable, and that the unjust attempts to destroy the one may in the issue tend to support an establishment of both." I mean, you can just go on and on and on and on.
Well, I've got one for you here. I can go on a little bit further. Alexis de Tocqueville wrote Democracy in America. He was a French political thinker and historian, writing in the 1800s. I think he wrote 1835 was the first issue of Democracy in America. And one of his most famous quotes is, he said, "America is great because she is good." And if America ever ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. And that's what's motivating. That's what we're talking about right now with the black-robed regiment. We're talking about America has perhaps, it's in the process of ceasing to be good. We are losing that. We're losing that moral foundation, that spiritual foundation. And as a result, it's not a coincidence. We lose our spiritual foundation. We also cease to be great. We are headed for great trouble in this country. Financial trouble, economic trouble, political trouble, they're coming our way in large measure because we've stepped away from the good Lord. Now, that was de Tocqueville's warning. You cease to be good, we'll cease to be great. The idea behind the black-robed regiment and restoring the black-robed regiment, which is what you're trying to do, is to try to restore the moral foundation for this country that is essential, and it's more important than sending $85 billion a month to the banks that are too big to fail. We don't need the economic stimulation. We need moral stimulation, and I think that's what you're trying to achieve with the black-robed regiment and restoring it. Go ahead and run with that.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Here's how John Adams put it, and I'm sure you've used this quote many times. He said, "Our Constitution was written only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other."
Do you know what surprises me about that quote? Now, this is the first time. Are you sure that that's an accurate quote?
Yes, sir.
The reason I'm asking is I'm familiar with the quote. And the quotes, every time I've seen it, was the Constitution was only fit for a moral people. I don't recall previously seeing that it was also for a religious people.
Yeah,
now, if you're right in your reference on the quote, all that to me, that's just evidence to me that's evidence of efforts to remove us from that spiritual foundation. They're separating. Oh, you got to be moral, but you don't have to be religious. You don't have to be spiritual. It's consistent with the idea that people in positions of power have been trying to remove us from our spiritual foundation. Just make us forget it. We're not taught about it. We don't know about it. We discover it, like you have.
Yeah.
And it becomes almost miraculous. It's hard to believe. How is it that you didn't hear about this until now?
Yeah. Well, he wrote that on October the 11th, 1798, and for anyone who wants to look it up, it's found in the works of John Adams that was published in volume number 9 on page 229. So that's where that comes from. But you can also find it in Washington's farewell address where he says that our republic has two supports, morality and religion. They would almost always capitalize religion. Because they meant Christianity. They didn't mean Buddhism or, you know, Hinduism. They meant Christianity. And he says that anyone who would try to subvert those two supports could not be called a patriot.
How does this relate to the separation of church and state? Now, we talked about this. You talked a little earlier about how people could embrace two separate ideas. On the one hand, they go to church on Sunday and they say, yay, God. And on the other hand, they engage in political activity that's contrary to God's will. That's a kind of evidence of a mental schizophrenia, a separation of church and state that exists in people's minds. And certainly it's been fostered by our government. But is it truly possible to separate the state from the church and expect the state to survive?
Well, listen to the historian John Wingate Thornton. He wrote this in 1860, and this is in a book about the Black Robe Regiment. He says, the fathers, this is a direct quote, the fathers, meaning the founding fathers, did not divorce politics and religion, but they denounced the separation as ungodly.
Absolutely.
We've turned that on its head today. We teach the exact opposite. We say that it's ungodly to mix politics and religion, but our founders, including the Black Regiment, said it was ungodly not to mix the two because they understood that if you do not infuse the truth into government, into economics, into whatever you're talking about, ultimately you're going to have a perverted, twisted form of that. So they knew that you had to have morality, and they understood that the best place for morality was the Bible, and that's why they referred and quoted, referred to and quoted from the Bible so often, and that was due to the black-robed regiment. And see, that's the whole reason why I'm so committed to trying to bring back the black-robed regiment. And what I mean by that is we've got to get pastors to begin to re-engage from the pulpit their people. They've got to begin to preach the whole counsel of God. There are three institutions that God created to perpetuate peace and life on this planet. It's the church, the family, and government. Government is an institution of God, according to Scripture. Now, why in the world would preachers refrain from preaching about one-third of the institutions that God created? It's just simply ridiculous. But we've done it, and now we're beginning to bear the harvest. And you said it just a while ago. We now have made such poor decisions, and I think they're immoral decisions economically, that it's all now beginning to cave in on us. You cannot take God out of the equation and continue to operate with a humanistic worldview and keep this thing afloat. It will ultimately collapse.
Without God in the equation, we can't really know right from wrong. And the result is anyone who stands up and speaks and is a compelling and persuasive speaker say, well, I believe what he thinks. And when somebody else comes up and they're persuasive and compelling, we can believe him. And we can believe the next guy and the next guy. And we are constantly turning in the wind like a leaf. The only way you get that stability, you have to have a sense of right and wrong. Ultimately, it has to trace back to the good Lord. When you have that, then you can look at speakers, and regardless of how smooth, sophisticated, and persuasive they may be, it gives you a personal internal compass where you can say, that guy's good, but this other guy over here is not doing a good job. He's not the guy. You got to have that internal compass, and it flows from an understanding of the good Lord. You know, we talked a little bit about separation of church and state, and how from the beginning that was contrary to the interests, the intent of the founding fathers, and you can see it right in the Declaration of Independence. Second sentence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Point. We all get our best, most important rights from God. That's the fundamental principle of that second sentence. Third sentence says, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Meaning, the principal purpose of government as envisioned by the Founding Fathers was to secure to every man, woman, and even unborn child the rights that had been given to them by God. Not by government, not by the legislature, not some lottery. It was all about, now you can't have those rights if God is separated from the state. You separate the church from the state, and you don't have access to those God-given rights anymore, or at least you don't have a government that's obligated to secure those rights on our behalf. We have been diminished to a great, to enormous extent because we've forgotten those fundamental principles. If people want to get involved in the Black Robe Brigade, if they're looking for local ministers who are part of the Black Robe Brigade, do you have a website where people can begin to learn more about this? Is there, where do we go for more information?
Well, yes, we do. In fact, I have a website, and it's just www.theblackrobed.com. That would be one place they could go. There's also a pastor out in Montana named Chuck Baldwin who has created a reference list so that people can go onto his website, and if they're in a particular part of a state, they can look and see if there's a black regiment preacher in their area. Another place that folks can go is the Alliance Defending Freedom website and find out a lot more about efforts that are being made to get pastors to speak up. In fact, they could go to speakupmovement.org. I've been a part of the Pulpit Freedom Initiative now for the last 5 years since its very inception. And we pastors around the country are trying to stand up and say there is a standard, and that standard is God's word. You know, what you were saying a while ago about you don't know truth from error if you don't have a standard. Just imagine trying to build a house without a standard of measurement on a measuring tape, but instead you were just left to guess and say, well, that looks about like it's 12 inches long. Well, you'd have a mess. You have to have a standard.
Yeah, it would be a challenge to. It would be definitely handcrafted, and it would be a challenge to assemble it.
Well, and if they go to my website, one of the things that they can do is learn a little bit about the Black Robe Regiment, but they can also access the materials I have. And like I say, I've just finished a book that documents their history, and it also talks about how we can bring this into the modern setting and call upon pastors to do what their black-robed ancestors did. Let me say this. I believe that the America that we know today would not exist had it not been for the Black-Robed Regiment of the 18th century, and I'm convinced that America will not survive if we cannot revive the spirit of the Black-Robed Regiment in the 21st century.
I agree with you 100%. You talked a little bit about the ministers have been muzzled, essentially. The pastors, the ministers, they have been muzzled where they're not speaking out the way they should. To what extent, how do you feel about the 501c3 churches? 501c3 being a section of the Internal Revenue Code, and it allows certain tax advantages, at least it did originally, for churches and for contributions. But it also requires that ministers spend no more than 5% of the total church budget on political activity. Do you see that as a source of the muzzling? Is it a primary source, or should we look elsewhere?
Well, it's a big part of it. I deal with this pretty extensively at the last of Volume 2 of my book. And one of the things that we have to understand is that churches do not have to be 501c3s to be tax exempt. The founders actually recognized the church as tax exempt from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So the 501c3 is just a categorization that the IRS has kind of imposed onto the system. Mm-hmm. But pastors have allowed that to intimidate them. For the last 5 years, with the help of the Alliance Defending Freedom, we started with 33 pastors nationwide. We preached sermons from our pulpits where we defied the Johnson Amendment, which is a part of the tax code. And we endorsed candidates from our pulpits, and then we sent our sermons to the IRS saying, this is what I did yesterday. The IRS did nothing. We've continued to do that for the last 5 years. We started with 33. Our last Pulpit Freedom Sunday, we had 1,600 pastors who officially participated. And the IRS has unofficially admitted they don't have the power to tell preachers what they can and can't preach. Now, you mentioned the 5%. It's even better than that, because if a church wants to actually operate as a lobbying organization where they don't spend the money but they just spend their time, they can spend up to 10% of their accumulated ministry time. If you think that through to its ultimate end, there's no church in the United States that would spend that much time lobbying. That's an enormous amount of time. If you took my church and all of the ministry hours that my staff and other leaders put in, we'd never come close to that. But pastors have been convinced that it's against the law, and they're afraid they're going to lose their tax-free status. Yep. There's never been a church in the history of the United States that has lost its tax-free status because of political speech. Not one.
I'll bet there's a handful of them that may have lost it, though, because they failed to dot every I, cross every T, as required by the IRS. I mean, you can, if you're going to be bold and speak out, you've got a chance. If you're going to be cowardly, your chances of survival may be diminished. I've got to thank you for being on the program, Pastor Dan. We are out of time. I'm here with Pastor Dan Fisher. You can find him at theblackrobed.com. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Thanks very much for being on the program. I certainly enjoyed it. I hope the audience did. We look forward to talking to you another time.
Thank you.
I'm Alfred Addis. This is the end of Financial Survival for today. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody Cederstrom. I want to thank all of you for listening. May the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Pastor Dan, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.